So there's a medrash, a very interesting medrash that tells us that if you see a shore, if you see an ox in Nisan, so then you should stay far away. Because in Nisan, the shore, whether it's the hormones or something going on with the shore, stay far away because the shore can be very dangerous. I say the same thing when it comes to a woman during Nisan. When women are busy preparing for Pesach, stay far, far away. especially when they are busy shopping. There's a one of the most frustrating things for men when they go shopping is they're waiting online, and the lady in front of them has a full cart of food, and they begin to fill up the getting it rung up by the lady, and then you start filling up your cart onto the little whatever you call it, the belt, and then she finishes, she's about to pay, and then she says, "Oh, I forgot a couple things." So she turns to the guy behind her and says, "Do you mind if I could go get a couple of things?" And you can't say, "Yes, I mind." Then you're the bad guy if you say, "Yes, I mind." And you don't want to start with a lady when she's shopping, especially during Pesach. It's like a shore in Chodesh Nisan. So you let her go and you wait. So recently, a friend of mine called me up. I mentioned this in the Joshua a couple of months ago. He said he used to be that girl, that lady who would do the same thing. So he was waiting online and he was with his little kid. And he paid for everything, and then he realized he forgot something. But he remembered my drasha. He said, "You know what? I'm going to pay. I'm going to go back around and start all over again." That's what he did with his little babe. So, but when a woman asks you, "Can you wait a second?" when she's shopping, you don't say, "I mind." You let her just do what she wants to do. So the month of Nisan, preparing for Pesach, is a very, very difficult time of year. And there's a lot to learn. There's a special halacha when it comes to Pesach. Shloshim Yom. That you need 30 days to prepare for Pesach. Because there's a lot to learn. You have to learn about Pesach. You have to learn about Yontif. You have to learn about kashering. You have to learn about cleaning. You have to learn about Chol HaMoed. No one learns about Chol HaMoed. You have to learn about the halachas of the Seder, how much to drink, how much to eat. You have to learn about Erev Tavshil. And there's so many halachas, you can't get it all in 30 days. And certainly not in one shir tonight. But I'd like to just raise some areas of halacha that we could at least think about, to be sensitive about. I can't go through everything. I can't do all of kashering. I can't do all of Chol HaMoed. I can't do all of Pesach. But I can raise some points to keep you interested and raise to yourself what types of questions should you be asking as you begin to prepare, if you're not already, prepare for Pesach. So the whole process, the whole month of whether it's shopping for food, whether it's shopping for clothing, whether it's kashering, whether it's the cost of everything, whether it's hosting a family, whether it's packing up to go to family, whether it's cramming into one house for Pesach, there's a lot of avdus here. This is avdus that leads to a cheres. It's meant to be very difficult. It's meant to be challenging, burdensome, overwhelming. It's mostly stressful. Don't feel like you're different. Every single person here, every single woman is stressed when it comes to preparing for Pesach. That's just the nature of Pesach. It's an avdus that leads to a cheres. Now, halacha understood this very well. Now, I also want you to realize that this stress does not fall upon the ladies only. Those who are married, you could quote me if you want, to make sure that the husbands get involved as well. They have to share the burden. Now, I'm not saying it's 50-50. But the role of the husband should be helping out as well. I like to joke that men don't know how to fold tablecloths. When it comes to the talis, however, they know how to fold the talis very nicely. They know how to fold. So why can't they fold a tablecloth? Or tell them that the halacha is a pasuk in the Torah that tells us that every single morning in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a special avoda that the Kohen would walk up, the very first avoda of every single day. The Kohen would walk up to the ramp of the Mizbeach. He'd take a shovel and take out the garbage. He'd pick up the ashes and take out the garbage. Now, how many husbands, we know husbands should be doing that, myself included. How many husbands actually do that? There's another Gemara that tells us, there's a concept in halacha called mitzvah bo yoser mibishlucha. That better for you to perform a mitzvah than send an agent, than send a shliach for you. So the Gemara gives a number of examples of great amoraim, great rabbis, who they themselves would prepare parts of Shabbos, whether it means that they would prepare the fish, make the chillin, prepare the candles, they would be involved in mopping the floor. I was once learning in a shul in Erev Shabbos, it was in Brooklyn, in Flatbush. We were spending a Shabbos at my brother-in-law's house. So I was learning in a shul, Avram Shor Shul in Flatbush. I was there on Friday, and I saw him. Now, he's a great tzaddik. He was mopping the floor in his shul. So we see that great rabbis do prepare for Shabbos. They do prepare for Pesach. So don't let your husbands off the hook, all right? Let them get involved. Help them out.
The story would be
better so, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky would say that he would recommend that a person, a bacher, should not live in a dorm. He shouldn't go to yeshiva in a dorm. Rather for him to stay home and live at home. If there's shalom bias in the house, let this bacher see what it's like to be a father, what it's like to be a husband, what it's like to take out the garbage, wash the dishes. The last place you're going to learn how to be the proper husband and father is in a dorm. That's the last place. You don't learn any good midos there. In yeshiva you do. But everybody knows, I was talking to some people last night at Sheva Brachos, he was telling me, one of our cousins was telling me that he saw a son-in-law who was very young when he got married, from 19. Now he's 21, 22. Huge difference in his midos. Unfortunately, when you live in a dorm, you don't learn how to be clean. You don't learn how to make your bed or cook or clean. You don't learn that in a dorm. You learn the opposite. Stay home if there's shalom bias. Stay home and appreciate what it's like to be a husband, what it's like to be a father. So don't let your husband off the hook. Let them get involved. So halacha understands the stress of preparing for Pesach. There's a halacha that I'm not sure if any of you know this. Erev Pesach, there is an Isser Malacha on Erev Pesach. So this coming year, next week is Friday, that's Erev Pesach. The halacha tells us that there's certain malachas that you cannot do on Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, after around noon. There's certain things you can't do, like haircutting. Cutting nails, you're not supposed to do. We'll go through some Heterim in just a second. Why? One of the reasons is because you have to prepare for Pesach. You have to burn the chametz. You have to bake matzahs. You have to clean the house. You have to kasher everything. It's a busy time. So the Chazal said, don't do any malacha because you have to prepare for Pesach. Now, just to deal with some halachas that you may not be aware of, Erev Pesach, what can you do and what can you not do? Now, everybody agrees that Erev Pesach, the Isser Malacha that exists, is not more severe than Chol HaMoed. We're going to address Chol HaMoed in a few moments from now. But it cannot be more severe than Chol HaMoed. So some examples of things you can't do Erev Pesach. It's brought down in Halacha. The Mishnah Brura says that if you didn't get a haircut, we know if you don't get a haircut Erev Pesach, you're in for a long stretch. I mean, it's more a problem for the men, I guess. But you're in a long stretch, at least Lag Bomer, until you're getting a haircut. So that's a month and change. So if you miss an opportunity, you cannot get a haircut after noon. Now, I'm not sure who would want to go to the barbershop at that time anyways. But if you want to go afternoon, you're not allowed to get a haircut from a Jew afternoon. If you get from a guy, that's actually permitted. The Mishnah Berurah writes as well, when it comes to cutting nails, so ideally a person should not wait to cut his nails or her nails after Chatzos. You should really cut them beforehand. Because after Chatzos, there's more preparation that needs to take place. You have to prepare for Pesach. What about washing laundry? So washing laundry, you're not allowed to wash laundry after Pesach. Once Chatzos comes, whatever time that is, around looking at the Zaman right now, not showing me right now, but around, let's say, 12:30, 1 o'clock is Chatzos. There you go. 12:57 is Chatzos. So next week's going to be around 1 o'clock. Comes 1 o'clock, you can't wash laundry anymore. It's Erev Pesach. It's Asur to do Malacha. You should be preparing for Yontif for Pesach, not doing anything like that.
Can the housekeeper?
If you need be, the housekeeper could do this, but ideally everything should be done beforehand, but if you haven't done it, you could rely on the housekeeper to do it afterwards as well. The poskim do say, let's say you put it in the washing machine right before 1 o'clock, 12:59. If you started beforehand, so then it could continue to run afterwards. But this just shows you severity, how the halacha does take into consideration it's a busy day. Get everything done much earlier. That being said, Chazal didn't say for 30 days is it usher to do malacha. Chazal didn't expect us to prepare for Pesach for 30 days long. They thought Erev Yontov was enough time for us to get ready. Just Erev Yontov, don't do malacha. Kasher everything, clean everything, burn your chametz. They thought Erev Pesach was enough time. They didn't think 30 days. How come nowadays ladies are so crazy about preparing for Pesach 30 days? The moment Purim's over, some even beforehand, they're already so crazy about Pesach. What's so crazy about Pesach? So I want to make three suggestions why I think it's so crazy for women. Now, I think Batsheva told me just the other day from my mother-in-law a story she just had about the craziness that women go through during Pesach. She was just in the Kol Save parking lot. My mother-in-law has wonderful stories in parking lots. So she was just in the Kol Save parking lot. I don't know if it's today or yesterday or some other. So she parked in a spot there, and she backed in, meaning so the head of the car was facing out. She could just drive out of the parking spot. She didn't have to back up out of the spot. So she finished shopping, and she loaded her car, and she's sitting in her car ready to pull out. The lady next to her was loading her trunk, parked the other way. So she didn't want to drive when there's a lady right there next to her, so she waited. So she's in the car waiting. The lady next to her finishes packing her trunk, and then she puts the cart right in front of my mother-in-law's car. So my mother-in-law asked her to move the cart, and she said, "Why?" So my mother-in-law said, "Because you're blocking my car." So she said to my mother-in-law, "Why don't you back up?" She said, "I can't back up because there's a car behind me." So she just rolled her eyes and just drove off. She said, "I'm busy now. I have other things to do." During Nissan, this is the shore, a woman during Nissan, don't get in her way. It gets very crazy. Reminds me of another story she had in the worst parking lot in the United States of America, the Gourmet Glot parking lot. So what happened there? So she's driving, my mother follows the rules all the time. So she's following the arrows. I know they change arrows from time to time. So now, whatever the arrows are there, they're going the right direction. So she drives whatever car she drives, and then coming at her, the wrong direction, is a big Suburban. I don't mean to insult anyone of those who drive Suburban, but the Suburbans, they feel like they could take over the road, right? They drive really, no, everyone get out of their way. So this lady's driving the wrong way, you get out of my way, I'm coming this way. So then they eventually go in, they didn't crash, but they came to a halt, like they played a game of chicken here. So I don't know, they're honking, they're screaming at each other. So the lady in the SUV and the Suburban says to my mother-in-law, "Could you back up?" She said, "I should back up, you're going the wrong way." So the lady in the Suburban says, "Well, I don't back up." She said, what do you mean you don't back up?" "I don't back up." "But you're going the wrong way. You have to back up." Went on for a long time. And finally a man came over and said, "I'll back up your Suburban." He got in the Suburban and reversed her so she could get out of the way. And by that time, I imagine there are 15 cars probably waiting behind to try to get through. So there's like a parking lot. Imagine during Pesach how crazy that parking lot could get. So why are women so crazy when it comes to Pesach? I agree 100%. I agree. I'll share with you another story just to show you how this behavior exists. Yes, I agree. Not trying to put anyone down, but of course, sometimes we do encounter some people who take this stuff very, very seriously. So let's think about why are women so crazy when it comes to Pesach. So one thing I believe is that women, more so than men, are more makbid on halacha. Not that men are against following halacha, but the way the men's minds work, they like lumdus, they like a nice shir in theory and abstract. You tell a woman a nice fancy shir, they want to know, what's the bottom line? What are you supposed to do? Like, okay, I'm very nice how you got all there from the Gemara, the Rishonim, but what am I supposed to do, lemaisa? That's just how women think. Men like the fancy theory, the lumdus behind it as well. So since women are so attuned to halacha, to MS, to what's truth, they want to know, bottom line, what's the halacha? And since there are so many halachas when it comes to Pesach, and even a small crumb of chametz is going to be usher, so then they want to know, what should we do? So they're so crazy about every single crumb because they care so much about halacha. It's coming from a very good place, a place that they want there to be MS and truth. That's where it comes from. It's a wonderful place, but sometimes it could get a little so extreme. But I wouldn't be bothered by this. This is how they are. This is how women are. It's because they care so much about halacha. They care about the emes. That's one understanding. The second understanding why I believe women get so excited about chametz and Pesach is because it's spring cleaning. Not because the halacha shabbat, because they want the house clean. It's been a long time. The snow and the salt and the leaves and the cold and the wet and everything. They want to just clean their house of all the dirt, all the mud, make it look very nice and clean. Now, it's very nice also because they want to make it clean in the context of halacha. They want to follow everything in the right way. Everything that we do, even the most mundane things, has to be according to halacha. Rav Soloveitchik had a sefer called Halachic Man. And in that he describes how man or woman should view the entire world through the prism of halacha. Whenever you go somewhere, how does this affect me halacha? What should I be doing halachically? When I was in Eretz Yisrael learning for the year, 20 years ago, so Rav Meish Charigan gave us a very nice shmooze, which I'll never forget. He said, the point of going to yeshiva for learning Eretz Yisrael for a year or two is to reprogram how we think. I'm a math guy. So me, for example, I think of the world, I view the world in numbers, because that's my nucleus is a number, so I think of numbers. A person who likes, art, sees the world as a painting. The point of going to yeshiva, he was explaining, was to get the nucleus to be Torah, halacha. When I see everything in the world, it's, how does this affect me? How does this food affect me halachically? How does this experience affect me halachically? We have to pick out a roof for a house, let's say. So my wife always says, when we're thinking about which color to pick, she views the whole world as a roof now. She looks at that house color roof, or if you're picking out landscaping, suddenly she sees the world in landscaping. Or we're picking out, a car, we have to get a new lease. So she just sees cars, everything about cars. So the point of this is to create that our whole world is halacha. So when we're cleaning for spring cleaning, it's through the prism of halacha. The Mishnah tells us famously in the Avos, Ezu Chacham, Halo made me call them. You learn from every single person. I would add further, you would even learn from a Snapple cap. I had the pleasure of taking my daughter to lunch today. We went to the bagel store, and we always read the Snapple caps. We always get Snapple, and we read a very nice Snapple cap. And it reminded me of a story. What was a Snapple fact? The fact was, there's one place in the United States of America where you could be standing in four different states at the same time. The place is called Four Corners. That's the name of the town or city. Four Corners, Arizona. If you're standing there, you're in four different states at the very same time. So what does this remind me of? So there's a bracha that one says when you see the Yam HaGadol. The special bracha, I'm not sure if anyone here has ever said it before, it's called Ose HaYam HaGadol. When you see the Yam HaGadol, you say the bracha that Kadosh Baruch Hu made the Yam HaGadol. Which sea is the Yam HaGadol? So all of us would guess it's probably the Mediterranean. But it's actually Machlokas, whether it's the Mediterranean Sea or whether it's the Atlantic Ocean. So since we don't know, you only say Ose Masa Bereshis when you see the Mediterranean, or if you say Atlantic, you say Ose Masa Bereshis. So one time Rav Chaim Kanievsky met a man, and he was introduced as whatever his name was, Plony, who lives in Gibraltar. He got so excited. Why? Because this is the one place in the world where the Mediterranean meets the Atlantic, so you could say the bracha, Ose Yam HaGadol, because you have both seas at the same point. So Rav Chaim always views the world as halacha. He meets a person, how does this impact me halachically? Sometimes I'm privileged to have these types of scenarios happen to me. I've got a long beard, so sometimes I attract certain questions coming my way. So I go out with a friend of mine. Every couple of months, we go out to dinner somewhere. They pick some place to go. So we went to a restaurant a couple of months ago called Barnea. I'm a fancy restaurant in the city. So we got to this restaurant, and there was an individual there who I knew who came over to me and said, we happened to be sitting right next to his table, and he was with a number of non-Jews. And he says to me that, I apologize, but we're a bit rowdy here. I hope it doesn't affect your meal. Not a problem. We're not having any serious conversation here. Fine. An hour and a half into the meal, this friend of mine at the table next to us comes over to me and says, the guy next to me, there was this guy who must have been like 6'8". If I was telling the boys, I'd say he'd be built like LeBron James. I don't know if that means anything to you ladies, but like a big college basketball player or a football player, and a muscular individual with tattoos up his arms. So he's whispering to me, that guy who's sitting next to me, he is the chief of staff to the Moroccan prince. Okay, sounds very chashuv. He says, they love the Jews in Morocco. Why? Because in the Arab Spring, when all the different governments toppled, and it was a couple years ago, Morocco was the only government that stayed intact. Nothing was affected. They still stayed strong. Like Syria's falling apart, and all the different countries in the Arab countries were falling apart. Morocco stayed strong. Why? So the Moroccan government attributes their strong government to all the Kivei Tzadikim who are buried in Rav Pintos. All the Pintos are buried in Morocco. Very big mukabalim. So the Moroccan government takes very good care of the Kivei Tzadikim. Supposedly, I've never been there, but supposedly you could like eat off the floor in these Kivei Tzadikim. They clean it so nicely. Because they preserve the Kivei Tzadikim, they attribute that to how the government was very healthily run. So they love the Jews. So while this individual is telling me this, this big man gets up from the table, walks right over to me, and he sticks out his hand, shakes my hand like a bone-crushing handshake. He says, Rabbi, will you give me a bracha, or will you give me a blessing? So suddenly, quickly, my mind started racing. Why? Because there is an isser in the Torah, it's called lo sechanim. Lo Sechanim, we learn three different halachas from Lo Sechanim. Number one is you can't give free gifts to a non-Jew. Number two is you can't give land in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew. Number three is you can't give a compliment to a non-Jew. Including giving gifts to a non-Jew is you can't give a bracha to a non-Jew. You can't give a bracha to a non-Jew. There's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say you're sitting at the table and there's a non-Jew there and you're benching. And you want to say, you know, give the bracha to everyone who's Mesubin Kan, and there's a Jew, non-Jew at the table, you can't say, you have to change the nusach. You have to say only the B'nai Bris, only the Jews that are here, you have to exclude the Goy from the bracha. It happened to me once, my grandmother has an aide, and she's a very religious aide. She's not Jewish, but she's very religious. So when we bench, she takes out a bench also and she benches. When we wash hands for hamotzi, she washes hamotzi. It's very strange, but she joins us for everything we do. So, like, for benching, we have to change the nusach. I didn't tell the rest of my family, but you have to change the nusach of only the B'nai Bris are included in the bracha. Because if you give them a bracha, that's actually a free gift. So now I'm thinking about my head, wait a second, am I allowed to give this big man a bracha? He's crushing my hand. And as he sees me, like, contemplating and delaying, he says, what's the big deal? I'm Muslim, you're Jewish, we all get along. Says, my grandmother was a Kohen, he tells me. I said, your grandmother's a Kohen? I'm thinking that you might even be Jewish. But I didn't want to tell him that. So in the end of the day, I gave him a bracha. Because there is a halacha that, Mishum Eva, if it's going to create animosity, or if it's going to bring about shalom, and he certainly takes care of the Jews, so there was a heter to give a bracha. But I had to recall all this in my head. So he told me after I gave him a bracha, whenever you want, you could come to Morocco. Just let this friend of ours know, and we'll take care of you. So I'm still waiting. My friend said he'll let me know when he goes to Morocco next. He'll take me with him, and we'll go see all the Kibbutz Tzaddikim. I haven't been there just yet, but hopefully soon. But what we see is everywhere you go, you have to think of halacha, how halacha impacts us. So spring cleaning, that you're cleaning the house, that's why women get so excited about Pesach, because they're cleaning, but it's also through the prism of halacha, how they should be going about this in the proper way. That's the second shot why I think women get so excited, it's the cleaning. The third shot is because we all have a minhag. Right? We've seen our mother, our grandmother, our great-grandma clean in such a very serious way. Now, even though it may not make total sense, somehow minhagim don't have to make sense. We follow minhagim even though they don't necessarily make sense. When I talk about how important minhagim are, I'd like to share a story from Rabbi Kiva Eger. Now, to highlight the point, I know a couple years ago there's a big incident in a school that some girls in the school were wearing tefillin. And if you look at the halacha, it's actually not a problem for a woman to wear tefillin. They're actually allowed to. But in the end of the day, the minhag is that they don't. There's halacha that women are allowed to shecht an animal. They could shecht meat. They could shecht a cow. But the minhag is that they don't. So even though halacha says something, minhagim tell us something different. Minhagim override halacha. So listen to this incredible ma'aseh which tells you how important minhagim are. So Rabbi Kiva Eger was once posed the following shaila. He was brought in a Sefer Torah. And they weren't sure who was the sofer of the Sefer Torah. So what's the relevance? So if the Sefer Torah was written by a frum Jew, then you're allowed to use the Sefer Torah. If it was written by an apikoros, a person who did not follow halacha, the halacha is you have to burn the Sefer Torah. It's brought down in halacha. So they had a Sefer Torah, which they found. They had no idea who authored it. And it's a big nafkamina. If it was authored by a frum Jew, then they use it and read it. And if it was authored by an apikoros, you have to burn it. So what do you do with such a Sefer Torah? Do you burn it or do you read it? How do you know who authored it? The sofer doesn't leave his name and give you an address to find out who wrote it. So Rabbi Kiva Eger said, what you should do is look at the last few psukim and the last few osios. If they're all the same, burn it. And if they're all different, you could use it. Why? The minhag has always been to invite the local rabbanim to write a letter. And they all have different handwriting. So if all the letters at the end are different letters, that indicates he followed the minhag, and if he followed the minhag, we could trust such a sofer. But if all the letters are exactly the same, we trust that he doesn't follow minhagim, and we would burn the Sefer Torah, Paskin Rabbi Kiva Eger. That's the third shot, I think, why women take Pesach cleaning so seriously, because it's what they saw. It's how we grew up. So whatever the reason is, whether it's because we care about halacha, because we want to clean, or because of minhagim, this is something that we all do. What I want to present to you is trying to make your life easier. Just very easy. I can't go through every utensil, every material, every kashrus in the kitchen, but I want to just give you the shortest, quickest, most convenient route, if you want, how to kasher and clean your house. This is what we do in our house. My wife, I'm sorry to keep putting you on the spot here, but she's very organized, lists and stickies and post-its, like everywhere. Everything's very organized. So you would imagine she should be preparing a month before Pesach already. But somehow over time, we've convinced her that you could get it all done in a week beforehand. We haven't started. We did shopping, but that's it. No cleaning, no kashering. The Sunday, we're going to go full force for a full week before Pesach. Everyone here could do that if they want, because it's not as hard as you imagine. So let's go through just a couple things about kashering and cleaning. Number one is your best friend is aluminum foil. Aluminum foil, heavy duty aluminum foil is going to be your best friend. That is the queen of kashrus. Why? If you cover everything, everything's really fine. I know ladies like to change things all the time, whether it's their hairstyle, their clothing, their house, their, I don't know, whatever they're changing. They like to change everything. So change your kitchen for 1 week. It's going to be nice and silver and shiny and sparkly. It's going to be beautiful. Our kitchen is nice. And it's like it's one big aluminum foil on Pesach. It's a nice look. That's our Pesach look. If women ask me when they're redoing the kitchen, what type of countertop should I buy? Is this one kasherable? This one Caesar stone, marble, granite, formica? Is it kasherable? I usually say to them, get anything you want. Because for 1 week of the year, you could just cover. You don't have to kasher it. Just cover it and you'll be fine. So why should you cover it? Sometimes it can be costly. You don't have to get the fancy, fancy ones. We buy these flimsy ones from one of the stores here. It's much cheaper. You could still cover it and be fine. Kashering it is very difficult, kashering a countertop. Why? Firstly, it's much easier to just cover. That's much easier, no question about that. Number two is, so what we've been doing for years is kashering with boiling water. So boiling water makes a huge mess. It's all over the place. You have to line everything with towels, and it goes in the cabinets. You have to wipe everything down. That's a big mess. Number two is, for it to really kasher the countertop, you have to drip it on every single spot. If it drips here, it's not enough if it spills over and drips. Every spot has to feel the drip of the pot. That's a lot of water. It's a lot of pouring. It's a lot of countertop. So it's a lot of time. It's not usually done so well. So recently, a few years ago, they said, we have a new chap now. You know the new chap had a kasher? The steam, right? Use steam. Great. So everyone went out and bought the steam. But the problem is the steam's not hot enough. Has to be a commercial steam, some type of steamer, that's approved by an expert, because it's steam doesn't mean when it hits the countertop that the countertop is turning to the boiling degree it needs to turn to. You need to know someone who knows this. One you buy in a regular store won't be good enough. Someone told me 3 years ago he looked into this, and the only thing available was some $700 commercial steamer. At that point, you may as well buy a whole new countertop then, as opposed to buying a steamer. So it doesn't seem very worth it or efficient. So the easiest thing is just to cover it with something very well, something that's very strong and durable for a week of Pesach. And you could use it from year to year. That's the easiest approach. That's what we do, and that's what I normally recommend. It's not saying the other ways aren't good, but if you're doing the other way, just make sure you're doing it properly.
You're talking about disposable heavy-duty tinfoil.
Yeah, for the countertop, I'm talking about some type of plastic, like the bendable plastic. It looks, you know what it's called?
But you can use heavy-duty tinfoil.
Yeah, for sure. Anything you want, cover it, and anything, exactly. Anything. Double layers is always good, because in case it rips, you have the bottom layer holding on to. But you could certainly do aluminum foil across everything. Everything will be perfectly fine. Now, when it comes to stovetops as well. So I'm not going to go through all the different details, but electric stovetops are not really kasherable. That's a challenging one. But the other stovetops with a fire, so you could either kasher them by putting them in the oven, and that oftentimes ruins them. What do we use? We use aluminum foil. We double wrap it in aluminum foil, and then that's all.
What do you wrap?
The grates in aluminum foil.
Heavy duty.
This way it stays strong. We double wrap it, and it's a nice new silver grate, the stovetop, and then everything's fine. Now, this isn't the only way. I'm just saying what we do, we find this easier. We have some help in the house, so we have her wrap it, and then I inspect it, make sure it's all covered, and then afterwards you unwrap it. It's much easier. There's no fire, so it doesn't get hot, and it's very good.
What about where the flame actually comes out?
Yeah.
That's fine as well.
You don't have to burn it for like 20 minutes, leave it on or anything?
No, if you want, you can. But the only thing, if anything falls in there, so then that's a shiloh, then you shouldn't eat that. If anything falls
in... It's always a shiloh, right? Yeah. If anything falls on a hot
right.
cooked...
Exactly.
Cooking,
so you're not doing anything.
If you have one, it's not, you can't use
exactly.
it anyway.
So therefore, some people like to put the, you know, there's a aluminum foil you could put around the fire to protect it. Most food that falls in that area, no one's really eating anyways. It doesn't really get there that often. So you're fine to just cover the grates.
Well,
if food does fall...
100%
does not burn. It might turn red a little bit, but does not create a fire. It's completely safe. We've done this for many years, and Baruch Hashem, everything's been fine. Yeah, and I've kashered before with aluminum. With I've taken a hot plate and made them turn red hot. That is much more dangerous to make your grates turn red hot than to cover it in aluminum foil.
Yeah.
You could do that also, but we did that once. It ruined it. It turned very white and ruined the rubber holding on. It works. It does. I'm not saying it's not. It certainly works.
Yeah.
But it did take away some of the color and ruin the rubber on the bottom of it. So that certainly works halachically.
So you have to cover
the sink,
the bottom of the stovetop.
The bottom of the stove. You don't. You can.
Stainless steel.
Right. You don't have to, but just if you it's better to cover it in case something falls there. This way you could eat it.
But you don't have to.
Yeah. Again, but you have to make sure, though.
I have a separate.
Right. So then you're fine. But right. Okay. But if you want to cover it, but it's safer to cover it anyways because if food falls there, if you forget, this way it's certainly not going to be chametz. You don't want to have to deal with the chametz food on Pesach and having to throw it out. So it's definitely best to cover it if possible. Right. There's a way. There's something I need to look into it.
Electric.
Some say the coil one works. What someone told me last year, someone from the OU told me last year, they have these little things you could place on top. I don't know what they're called. It's...
I looked into this. We rent a house for Pesach. My parents kosher the house, and we got it, and it damages the glass on the stove top.
Supposedly, there's one that they told me that doesn't damage. I don't know the details of them all, but I know it is a hard. Most people say you cannot kosher the electrical stove top. If it's the one that's above, you're talking the one above. I'm talking about the glass tops.
Oh, glass top.
The glass top, exactly. Oh. The one that above that we had in the old house, that one that turns red hot, that's very simple to kosher.
The issue of the glass?
The glass, exactly. The glass is the issue, yeah. Okay, let's talk about cleaning for Pesach. Not koshering, but cleaning. Now, I know women spend a lot of time cleaning every single crumb, every single crack. They scrub the tile with toothbrushes and everything like that. You really don't have to clean that much. All you have to really be concerned with is if there's actual food, not crumbs. If you find a crouton, a Cheerio somewhere, those are the biggest concerns. But to have to clean for every single crumb, you don't have to do that. In our house, we haven't started cleaning yet. Come Sunday, we did. Maybe today a little bit. My child was off from school. We had to keep her busy a little bit. So I guess you started cleaning today. But Sunday, we're going to go full force. We're going to clean the car. Actually, not the cars, because we didn't bring any food in the cars. But the cars we clean, we check the pockets. But all the rooms in the house, if you don't bring food in there, you don't have to check them. There's no need to check those rooms. We go around with a flashlight just making sure there's no, you know, Cheerios that may have gotten there. But you don't have to sweep up every last crumb. It shouldn't be that crazy. It should really take a couple hours to clean the whole house. The kitchen is really the Icarus. The kitchen where the refrigerator and the cabinets and all that stuff, that takes a lot of time. But the whole house does not need to be turned over. You don't have to regrout all the, you know, if you want to because it looks nice and clean, that's fine. But in terms of Pesach, you don't have to regrout and clean everything with a toothbrush. So I want to touch upon now the halachas of Chol HaMoed just for a moment, because this is an area that really does not get much attention. Rav Nevensal says that there are a few areas of halach that he finds that the Americans don't know so much about. One of them is Amir L'Akum. We'll spend another shiur on that Amir Tashem about, Amir L'Akum. Amir L'Akum, by the way, you should know, most people think it only applies to Shabbos, that what you can't do in Shabbos, you can't tell a goy to do on Shabbos. It applies to every single Isser, Yantif, Chol HaMoed, even other Yisurim. Just to what the Gemara talks about, the Gemara talks about, there's an Issur D'oraisa, you can't sterilize a dog or an animal. So the Gemara says, why don't you have a goy do it for you? And the Gemara says, because Amir L'Akum applies even to sterilizing animals. Any Issur that a Jew can't do, you cannot have a goy do for you either. So we see from here that that's an area of halacha that Rav Nevensal felt that Americans don't know very much about. The other area he said was Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed, most Americans don't know so much about it, and that's simply because there's no time to learn about it. Because we're busy kashering for Pesach, cleaning for Pesach, all the lachas of the Seder. Sukkah is the same thing. We're busy buying dal min and building a sukkah. There's no time to learn about Chol HaMoed. It's just like the forgotten area of halacha. But there are many halachas that apply. And there are very complicated halachas when it comes to Chol HaMoed. So there's a game that we play in my house. We play a number of games at my Shabbos table. One game, for example, we play. I'll go around the table, ask questions to the kids. Parsha questions, halacha questions, whatever the questions are. So one time I thought to just ask an interesting question to one of my kids. I said to them that I won't say to who, it wasn't Batsheva. I said, could you count in Hebrew for me? So he said, yeah, of course I can. Hoshia esamecha v'rechas nachal asecha. So one of the other kids says, no, that's Yiddish. So they clearly didn't learn how to count in Hebrew just yet. So another question I like to ask the kids is when it comes to a Yontif, I ask them, what do you think the top three questions I had this Erev Yontif? So I was telling just, I think, Batsheva this morning, the number one question I get when it comes to Pesach and Sukkot is, can you get a manicure during Chol HaMoed? A couple hours later, someone posted on the chat, are you allowed to get a manicure during Chol HaMoed? So this is one of the most popular questions we get every single Yontif, every single Chol HaMoed. So let's address that question. Can one get a manicure on Chol HaMoed? So let's just talk about some brief halachas of Chol HaMoed. Number one is, we all know you cannot get haircuts during Chol HaMoed. Primary reason is because they want you to get a haircut before Yontif. If you wait to get one on Chol HaMoed, you're not going to get one before Yontif, and you're not going to come in looking presentable. So they said you can't get a haircut during Chol HaMoed. That will therefore force you to get a haircut Erev Yontif. The halacha is as well, you can't cut your nails on Chol HaMoed. Why? Same reason. They want you to cut the nails before Yontif to look nice for Yontif. But let's say a person did cut their nails before Yontif, like they were supposed to. And it happens to be the nail grew very long. Are you allowed to cut your nails? So that's a machlokas. But everybody agrees if a woman does regularly go to get a manicure, Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif, or whatever the frequency is, but it's somewhat frequent, so all the poskim say that you can get a manicure during Chol HaMoed. That's allowed. I got two questions today about Chol HaMoed related to cars. Actually, one was last night. Someone emailed me last night, can you go for driving lessons? A girl in high school said, could you go for driving lessons during Chol HaMoed? And today, on the men's chat, they asked me, can you have someone paint your car during Chol HaMoed? Is that allowed? So two halachas relate to cars during Chol HaMoed. So the answer is, when it comes to driving cars, let's talk about cars in general. You really shouldn't be driving cars because you can't do malacha on Chol HaMoed, unless it's going to be for Tzorach Yontif. So if you're driving to shul, you're allowed to. If you're driving to go on a trip, you're allowed to. But if you're driving just to drive, I'm not sure who really does that, but you're driving just to drive and waste time, that wouldn't be allowed, according to many posts. And that's doing a malacha of burning gas when you don't need to. So I said to this, emailed this girl back, I said, I think one should not take driving lessons. There's no Tzorach Yontif there. There's no enjoyment. I know she's probably excited to get her license. But I said, if it doesn't, it's no davar of it. There's nothing lost money here. You should wait till after or before Chol HaMoed to go for the driving lessons. So what about the guy who asked me about getting the car painted during Chol HaMoed? So most things that comes to a car, there's something called Maisa Uman and Maisa Hedyo. There's professional work, and then there's going to be work that's not so professional. So when it comes to fixing a car, painting a car, that's considered a Maisa Uman. That's a professional work. And you cannot have any Maisa Uman, anything professional done on a car, or anything at all for that matter, during Chol HaMoed. You can't have a work being done in your house either.
What if it's not professional painting it? Like, what if it's your friend?
So then, that might be permitted. If a friend's doing it, maybe that would be permitted. They talk about, what about changing a tire? Let's say you have a flat tire. So if you're going to, it's your only car you have and you can't get to your destination for a Moed, so then you certainly can get it fixed. But they say that getting a flat tire fixed is actually a Maisa Uman. Fixing a flat tire would be a Maisa Uman, and one should not change a tire on Chol HaMoed. And these are halachas that we don't really know. Going to a doctor, I've gotten this question many times. Could you have a doctor's appointment during Chol HaMoed? And the answer is no. If a person is sick, you need something being taken care of, fine. But to go for a regular checkup, that's something that we don't do during Chol HaMoed. It's supposed to be a time not to just get all our appointments in. It's supposed to be a time where we're spending time with family and Yontif, not things outside of that. So these are just a few halachas just to be aware of what to raise about Chol HaMoed.
You said you can have workers in your house. But what if you're in the middle of building a house for a year and a half and you're very delayed?
That's a particular case. We'll talk about that afterwards. Okay. But generally speaking, that the person should not have any work in their house. I'll raise another point as well, laundry. I get this question every Chol HaMoed. Can we do laundry during Chol HaMoed? The answer is no. You cannot do laundry. You cannot wash clothing during Chol HaMoed. The only heter is if there are children who ran out of clothing and they're all dirty, so then one would be allowed to. But for adults, so that not either. It's better actually to buy new stuff than it is to wash during Chol HaMoed. That's unless it's for children, there is no heter for doing laundry.
But they can get ruined if you leave a grate or something.
I don't know about that. I don't think they'll get ruined. But if it's true, if in fact, I don't know much about this stuff, but if they will get ruined, so then you can. There's a heter called Davar HaAvid. When something can get lost, you're allowed to do melacha on Chol HaMoed. So if you're going to lose money, you shouldn't be going to work during Chol HaMoed. But if you're going to lose pay, you're going to lose money, so then you're allowed to go to work. So if you're going to tell me that your tablecloth will get ruined in the grape juice, so then you could clean it because it will get ruined. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the case, whether it really will get ruined. But if it will, there's a heter. If it won't get ruined, better to buy a new one than it is to do laundry.
That's tablecloths.
That's a lot, yeah.
I don't own 8 tables.
Use plastic.
Are they have to go with plastic?
Yeah. Up to what age of a child?
It's a very good question. It's a good question. I'm not sure the age. My guess is a child, I don't have an exact age, but a child who often gets dirty. So I'm going to say like a 9-year-old, at least using our children as an example, 9-year-olds and younger, they oftentimes get very dirty. They're always walking around with chocolate and dirt all over them. From 10 and above, from our experience, they seem to be a little bit more neater. So it's a child who normally gets dirty, then they run out of clothing, then there's a heter to do laundry. But anyone who is older than that, even though he might not be bar mitzvah yet, it would not be a heter, would seem. Yeah, sorry.
We always get into this with my family. They throw the kids laundry, and then they're like, well, what's the big deal? We'll throw a couple of towels in there, too. We ran out of kitchen.
Great question.
So if you're doing the laundry anyway.
Great question. The answer is no, you're not allowed to. You could do a load for all the children who need the laundry, but you're not allowed to throw any adult stuff in there.
It's not adult. It's
just towels.
Right. But
kids are using the towels. Correct. Also, the towels are getting dirty because you're cleaning up the spilled grapes.
Right.
You know?
Right, it's an interesting point, but I believe the halach is not. I'll double check that, but I believe in that case still, one should not do it.
You're doing the laundry anyway for
right.
the kids.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Can you spot clean?
Yeah, you can spot clean. Very good question. You're allowed to spot clean. That would be a heter. If something, a little spot gets dirty, you're allowed to spot clean. That would be permitted. Or if something would get ruined, that would be another heter for doing laundry. So again, these are just a little tip of the iceberg of all the questions that have to do with kashering and cleaning and Chol HaMoed. I'll just finish with one last idea, just to appreciate what everything that you ladies are doing to help clean and prepare for Pesach. Oftentimes, I imagine that the women feel stressed and a heavy burden on them, and it's the olah of mitzvahs. It's the burden that mitzvahs weigh upon women. But it's a beautiful thing because even that which you're busy cleaning and doing spring cleaning, the fact that you are infusing it with Kedusha and with mitzvah is really an incredible idea. And it reminds me of an idea that I like to share often from the Chafetz Chaim. And it's related to Pesach as we're just a week and a half away, where the Torah tells us that when Moshe Benu, he heard the sound from the sneh, heard the voice talking from the sneh, and he hears the name Moshe Moshe, he says, Vayomer Hineni, here I am. So the Torah tells us that the sneh says, Al tikrav halom, don't come any closer. Stop where you are. And it says, Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, remove the shoes that you're wearing, because ki amakom asher ata omer alav admas kodeshu, because the land upon which you're standing is admas kodesh. So asks the Chafetz Chaim, I don't understand. It first says, Al tikrav halom, don't come any closer, meaning where you are, don't come closer, because any closer is kedusha. Where you're standing is fine. But then the Torah says, Shal na'alecha, remove your shoes, because where you're standing is Admas Kodesh. So where's the Admas Kodesh? Where's the Kedusha? So it says the Chafetz Chaim that there's certain places in this world where the Kedusha is so apparent. A shul, a base Knesset, a base Medrash, a yeshiva. And then there's everywhere else in the world where it's not apparent. But if you're Shal na'alecha, if you remove the shoes, you remove the mask, you could find Kedusha everywhere else you go, is Admas Kodesh. So when Moshe Benu was Shalom Alech, he learned this lesson. So it's true of every mitzvah that we do. When it comes to the most mundane things like cleaning and kashering, which seems very, and it is very tedious, it's stressful, but it's creating Admas Kodesh. It's really infusing Kedusha and mitzvahs to everywhere we go. And that's why in Parshas Tzav, I mentioned this a few weeks ago in the shul, that Parshas Tzav, right in the beginning, which is all about mitzvahs, this Tzav, there's 96 psukim in Tzav, it's all about mitzvahs. So right in the beginning, it talks about the Karban Ola. Because Karban Ola, an ol of mitzvahs, could on one hand be an ol is a burden, but a mitzvah could also be an ola. It could also be something that's elevating and inspiring. And if you view the world as Admas Kodesh, not as burdens, but Admas Kodesh, so then that's going to be a completely different perspective. That's going to be an inspiring one of being involved in Kedusha wherever you go. So the Gemara tells us that in the future there's not going to be any more mitzvahs anymore. Batel mitzvahs. No more mitzvahs. I mean, no more mitzvahs. How is that possible? No more mitzvahs. So the Degel Machaneh Ephraim explains because it's not going to be viewed as an ol anymore. Mitzvahs will not be viewed as a tzivoy, as a commandment against our will. We're going to be so, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shekhinah, is going to be so present, we're going to want to do the mitzvahs, it's going to be inspiring, it's going to be an ola, where it won't be viewed as a tzivoy, but rather an inspiring moment to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because we're not going to have to be shal na'alecha. We won't have to remove our shoes anymore, because the Admas Kodesh will be so apparent. So there's a story, this is what I shared when I gave this drush a few weeks ago, from the Yeshua's Yaakov. Yeshua's Yaakov was Rav Yaakov Yeshua Orenstein. He was a great Rav in Poland. And they had a very nice relationship, the Jews had a very nice relationship with the emperor or the king or the president of Poland. So the president of Poland wanted to pay a visit to the shul of the Yeshua's Yaakov. So he wanted to prepare a very nice welcome for the president. So they began to clean the shul and paint the shul. So the way it was back then, all the shuls had a picture of the president in the lobby. So they turned the picture of the president around, so when they were painting, they wouldn't ruin the painting of the president, and they turned it back around for when he would come. So they got very busy, and then they didn't have a chance to turn it back. They forgot to turn the president's picture back around. So they welcomed the president inside the shul, and immediately the president notices, and everyone else notices, that the picture of the president was turned around. They saw the back of the painting. So the president was very noticeably upset. Yeshua's Yaakov understood what was going on here. So he explained, he said, Mr. President, I understand that you're probably wondering and quite disturbed that the picture of you is flipped around. So let me explain something to you. We have a mitzvah in Yiddishkeit of tefillin. We wear tefillin every single day, reminds us of the Kaddish Baruch Hu. But one day of the week, we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. We don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. Why not? He explained, because on Shabbos, the Shechina, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is with us. We don't need the mitzvahs to remind us. We don't need the tefillin to remind us anymore. Says the Yeshua's Yaakov, all year round, the present, you're so far away. We have a picture of you to remind us of the present. But when you're in our presence, we don't need to be reminded. We actually have the president here. And he liked this very much. So the idea is, of course, that as long as we view the kashering of Pesach and the cleaning of Pesach, all the preparations as a mitzvah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our presence, because it's all Admas Kodesh, so that's going to be a carbon ola. That's going to be inspiring and elevating. And it's going to give you and us all a different perspective in preparing for Pesach as a way of coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and creating Admas Kodesh. We should be zocha to be celebrating the next Pesach and Yishlaim together, the Karban Pesach, the B'ez Midrash Mashiach. May Amen.